We want to focus on what we call the Mediterranean Basin to kind of get a background for all these wars, because they're all going to take place by people coming into this region. And so we have, if we want to look at geographically, with Israel kind of in the center, 75 miles by 300 miles, and around them are their enemies. Now remember, the enemies of Israel are the same enemies of the church. And they're also the same enemies of God. They're God's enemies, because Satan is God's enemy and Satan's behind all this. People don't know what they're doing. Okay, that'll come on and then go off. So if we want to start over in this region of the Northwest Africa, we find the country of Egypt today. At one time in history, they were an empire, and they controlled a lot of this region in here. Then we move over to an area up here from Israel. You can see your map. There's a country here today that wedges right in here called Lebanon, right?
Okay.
The ancient name of the Lebanese were the Phoenicians. They were the seafaring people. Now, this goes back from our time, but it's post-Bible time, right? Okay. And then over here you have Syria today. And then over along in here you have Jordan. And then this is out of proportion. Of course, the Sinai is here. And Saudi Arabia is down in here. And Iraq is over in here. And then Persia, which is Iran, there. And this would have been Babylon. So if you kind of associate present-day names with Bible time names, Egypt remains Egypt. The Assyrians, Assyria, Babylon, Iraq, Medo-Persian would be the Medes, are the Medes' descendants, and the Iranians are the Persians. And then we still have that country today. And then you went up to Greece. It's still there today, but Greece ruled this whole area down here through Alexander the Great. And then you have Rome took over Greece, and they gained all their area. And then in chapter 11 of Daniel, you start having the battle between the kings of the south, the king of the south and the king of the north. And originally, it's Antiochus Epiphanes ruling out of Syria, who was one of Alexander's generals. Remember, he died. The big horn was broken off, the shaggy goat, and then the four came up, his generals, and then one got more power in there. It's the type of an Antichrist. Antiochus is, see, the preterists believe that he was the Antichrist, destroyed the second temple, and so Revelation and all that's been fulfilled. No, it's not at all. Okay.
What did you say that the Phoenicians were?
The Lebanese. Used to be Phoenicians.
The meaning of the word Phoenician.
Phoenicians were a group of people. They were seafarers.
Yeah.
They did a lot of sailing. They had a lot of ships and did a lot of trade with the Phoenicians. The Phoenicians and the Philistines are not the same at all, because the Philistines were in this part of Israel. Today, it's called the Gaza Strip. But it was Gaza, and they had three towns, and that's where the Philistines lived. Isn't it funny, the same enemies, the big enemies, are there today. They call themselves Palestinians. Okay, so that's kind of the geographic now. If you want to look at the people situation, when Israel had divided after Solomon into two kingdoms, with Rehoboam and Jeroboam reigning, we had 10 kingdoms to the north, 2 to the south. The northern kingdom had several names. If you look at one of the maps, it shows where the different tribes were. They took that name from the tribe. And so it was named after one of Joseph's sons. He had two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh. And it was named after Ephraim, because that's where the Ephraimites lived. There were usually boys' names. Those, like there's area of Reuben, area of Simeon, Dan, and Judah is from the boy Judah, number 4 from Leah, right? And its capital of that region was Jerusalem. To the north, which later became Samaria, because that was the remnants from the 10 tribes that were left after the Assyrians took them away. They always left some people in the land. They intermarried with Hittites and others, and so they became half Jews. At the time of Jesus, the Samaritans were half Jews. And they were considered to be outcasts by the other Jews, the Pharisees and Sadducees. But see, it all goes back to that early history when it divided. And their capital was?
Shechem.
Shechem. Now, a lot of things happened at Shechem, you remember, way back. That's where the king of Shechem's son raped their daughter, Dinah. And then they said to Mary, our daughter, you have to have all your men circumcised. And while they were going to finish their surgery, Simeon and Levi led the revolution and went in there and killed all the men. And then they had to leave that area. And then Rachel, having carrying Benjamin, she dies in childbirth. So a lot of things happened there. But okay. So as the northern kingdom was never godly, and so God warned them and warned them. Hosea, Amos, all kinds of the prophets went there. And they never repented. So God sent the Assyrians in to take them into captivity. But there's still some of them that were left there. The same thing happened in the southern kingdom. The Babylonians came in and took them over. Why did the Babylonians take over the southern kingdom, not the Assyrians? The Assyrians defeated the Egyptians and gained that area. The Babylonians defeated the Assyrians and gained that area. The Medo-Persians defeated the Babylonians and gained this area. The Greeks defeated the Medo-Persians and gained this area. The Romans defeated the Greeks and gained that area. That's simple. If okay, no, really. Okay, no, it's not, because it goes right around here. See, the Egyptians did the work of taking care of this area, getting under control. The Syrians did a little over here, and then when they defeated them, they gained it. They didn't have to work at it. And the same thing with the Babylonians. Once they defeated the headquarters, then they gained all the rest. But that's in the Bible, and it's Daniel chapter 2. The statue, the gold head, was Nebuchadnezzar. And you say, well, wait a minute. The statue doesn't talk about the Assyrians and the Egyptians. See, because some prophecies start at the time of the person getting it. Nebuchadnezzar got it. So it relates to him going forward. See? It's not a contradiction. And when it talks about the four beasts in chapter 8 of Daniel, well, it's the time of the Medo-Persians. So it talks about them. One, two, three, and oh, where's the fourth one? And it talks there are going to be seven. Where's the seventh? Well, at the time of the writing of the Bible, the seventh hasn't occurred. When the New Testament opens, who's in charge of this area? When Jesus comes into the world, who's in the Romans? So you know that your reference point is Rome. All right. But we've lived to see this happen. This is the revived Roman Empire, the United Europe. We've seen it. There are seven. There are going to be nine, which is the eighth. And the eighth one is what we're talking about in these wars. The eighth is the little horn that gets control of the, there's 10 horns, you remember? And a little horn comes up among three of those. In other words, there are 10 governors of Europe. And Europe is divided into 10 zones. All right, he gets control of three of those, you know, through political influence, and they give authority to him. So all of this becomes one. And then the seven yield to him, and he, just like Hitler rose in Europe. He was a chancellor. He wasn't he didn't have power over the parliament, but he dissolved it. See, he kept gaining power as the people gave him power. same thing will happen probably. All right, so then we have the revived Roman Empire being taken over by the Antichrist Empire. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And then the stone cut out from heaven is pictured as, comes and crushes the statue and fills the whole world. And that's
Jesus
Christ. That's the millennium. See? Now that's our foundation. So now these nine wars have got to fit into that. But it has to start after the revived Roman Empire. And we live in that time. Okay, so that's just a brief introduction. Okay.
We owe a debt of thanks to this young lad that in 1947 he was herding goats and he was throwing rocks into this cave and he found, and after he had wrapped to throw the rock in there, and he heard a thumping sound like it was clay. And he went in and he found these S&Es and the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yes, and what do the Dead Sea Scrolls validate?
Isaiah?
Pardon?
Isaiah?
Well, there's more in Isaiah, but in general, it validates the authenticity of the Bible. The Bible. These very ancient scrolls, remember, they didn't have a photocopy machine and printing press, and it was all hand-copied, but it was intact. God's kept his word intact. That's what validated that, didn't it?
He took them in and gave them to the Jewish order. And he went right into, because he found that they were written in Jewish.
In Hebrew. Okay, Roy asked this question about Israel. You've got to remember that prior to World War I, most of the people in the whole Middle East area were Bedouins. That meant they moved from place to place, nomadic we would call them. Lived in tents. Abraham lived in a goat hair tent and so on. Very much like that. Yes, there were cities. Damascus is even mentioned in the New Testament. There definitely were cities. But what you had was a very loose confederation of government. Tribal, more tribal-like. And so as we look at what became Israel, now with God it was still Israel. But the Romans renamed this to insult the Jews, and they call it Palestine. Named after, it's the Romanized way of saying Philistine. So technically speaking, there are no Palestinians. Genetically, there's no Palestinian. Does that make sense? Okay, so we should always have this as Israel. It never stopped to be Israel to God, right? He just took the people out, a lot of the people, but still some remained. Always people remained. And there would be some intermarriage, but remember God gave to the Jewish people a desire to remain isolated because he's working with them, right? He's still not through. So that's why he gave them the diet and all those things so they would be sanctified, separated from the world. Okay, well, so what do we find happen in world? Well, think of Winston Churchill was the key player. Now, he was Lord of the what? He wasn't Prime Minister then. He was Lord of the Admiralty, which is the same thing as saying what? In our term.
Chief.
Secretary of the Navy, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
He was the Chief Admiral. He was the head of the Navy. Now, what were ships burning for fuel?
Coal.
Now, coal is heavy, takes a long time to load coal and to deal with the furnaces, it's a lot of work. Well, oil was starting to come in at that time, and some of the ships had converted to oil, and he saw that The future was oil fuel. Now, where were they getting their oil?
The Middle East.
Right. The British developed oil in what country as today?
Iran.
And Iran, that's right. And it was called the AMP Oil Company. What does it mean?
Atlantic.
No, that's the tea. That's the Atlantic Pacific is the grocery store. Okay, what's the colloquial name for white people?
Anglo.
Anglo-Persian oil. Now, the British went into Saudi Arabia and could not find oil. I think God blinded them. But the Rockefellers went in, U.S. went in and found oil. So Saudi oil was developed by Standard Oil. I worked for Standard Oil when I was there technically. And that company is called ARAMCO. CO, of course, means company, right? So what is this?
Arab American?
American, okay, yeah. Okay. No. And they're first, right? Well, when I was there, they had finished their last payment to Standard Oil. I don't know if they changed the name or not, but the president became a Saudi for the first time. So that's when things started to really change.
You're talking about when they nationalized it?
No, this was nationalized.
Okay.
When Ayatollah came in. They took it away from the British. They lost a lot of money. They bought. They did not nationalize. Okay. Now, so this area, after World War I, called the Bellflower Accord, the world, I believe, I don't know what organization, it was the League of Nations, what it was then, but they gave this land to Israel, to the Jews. Now, it included Jordan. Jordan did not exist at that time. It was called Transjordan, I think, this whole area or something, or Palestine. Well, that was given to them. But after the war had finished, sometime after that, after they'd been given, Winston Churchill went on his own initiative, representing the British, and came down to the oil people here and said that if you work with us in this oil thing and we can really get involved with you in the oil and developing this oil, I will give you this. The Arabs, you could have that. So just like that, given away.
Did he have the authority to do that?
But the land was there now for the people. But the people, why would the Jews in Europe want to come down when they had fit into the culture and they had business people? Not all, some were poor. But they weren't going to come there to a desolate land. It was awful. The Romans had destroyed all the land by chopping all the trees down. They've reforested with billions of trees in Israel and changed the climate and everything. They brought it back. They drained the swamps. All kinds of things they've done to restore things. But no, so they didn't want to come. But after World War II, they were ready to come because of the persecution. He allowed that persecution, which then brought the people to the land. And then in 1948, when it became a state, they wanted to partition Israel. The Arabs go over here, the Palestinians, and the Jews come over here. They'd already given two-thirds away, and they wanted to partition it, and it did not come into play. The Arab countries said to all of their people, come out of there, and we'll destroy them, and then you can go back. Well, where are those people that came out today?
A lot of them are in Jordan.
Yes, they're in Jordan. And before Arafat came on the scene, where were they in Jordan? In camps, refugee camps. They said, you come out. The Arab Muslim leader said, you come out. The Jews said, you stay. You see, but people, they've distorted the history, and then people believe it. People in churches believe this stuff. You know, God's through with Israel and all this stuff. Really, think about it. Okay, but that's what happened. Now, some did go back. And there are a number, I think there are about a million Muslims that live in Israel.
But Britain had control of Israel at that time, prior to 1948, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing.
In Iraq.
And as soon as Israel
Egypt.
Became a nation, that's when the Arabs invaded them, went to war. And they told these Muslims, they said, look, you withdraw from that area because they were so confident of victory, and as soon as the war is over, then you can return.
Yes.
Well, it didn't quite work out for you.
No, it didn't. And that's why you end up with these refugee camps. And the Arafat, who was an Egyptian, came over and talked to the young guys. I guess he needed some attention. And I'll lead you, and the PLO gets formed. And then we had a president who says, oh, come on over here, and I'll give you world accreditation, and then he gets the Peace Prize. Arafat was the father of modern-day terrorism. Does terrorism work? Yes. They've been very successful because we have compromised instead of being strong.
Right.
We had a president where we had problems with Iran and hostages, and he said, as soon as I step into that office, you guys have had it. And they released him immediately. It's only the tough stuff that they will be serious about. You can't make concessions. Chamberlain made them with Hitler, right? And look what happened. Okay. Now, those wars, the war of here in 48, 49, and the 67 war, and all those wars are not the wars we're talking about. They're not the ones that are in the Bible, per se. Okay? So we got to fast forward now. So where are we going to go? We go to the first war, which was Psalm 83. Now, I'm going to go quickly over this because we got a lot to do with War 8.
Yeah.
All right, so I have entitled it, and I'm going to give you another handout. And if you look at the bottom, you'll see a timeline. I tried to put that up last night. Got one for each of you. And I hope that that will help. If you all focus down below, you will see that, yeah. This is after work. That came pretty good, I thought. So we want to thank Jack for this. I'm not being a sadistic, cynical. Okay. The first two wars are during the prior to the tribulation, so I'm calling it pre-tribulation period. And you can see in your handout the outline of all the wars, that is Psalm 83. We're not going to go into it, but I'm going to make a reference to it. It follows a pattern. You have Israel and you have its neighbors. You have the neighbors that actually border Israel. 83 deals with those. Those are removed. That's the first war. So Jordan and Syria and those people are going down. Islam's going down. Then War 2 deals with what? Ezekiel 38, 39. And this is where some teachers say that's Armageddon. Well, it's Gog and Magog. But I think if you study it all in perspective, you'll see, no, that's a war that takes place prior to the tribulation. And that is dealing with Russia. And then you have all these other countries down here which are Muslim. They used to be part of the Soviet Union. Kazakhstan, Turkestan, Georgia, all of those are in that group, known as the King of the North. And then it talks about Iran. It mentions Saudi Arabia as an exemption. Saudi Arabia is not going to be involved. Politically, they will, but no, they won't, because they are allied with the USA very strongly. They're scared to death. They need us. They're not going to go. They'll publicly say things, but under the table, no, they're going to support us.
And you're still in War II?
You're in War II?
Mm-hmm.
No, as the whole end time wars come down, they will not, the Shebab and Dedab, those, if you go to the genealogies, that's that region, that's Saudi Arabia.
You know, one interesting thing about this, though, is when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, his main objective was Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
Right next door.
Mm-hmm.
So if we got Kuwait, it would have been a pushover, because Saudi mm-hmm. Arabia doesn't have any army.
Right. Well, they have a small one. But,
small one.
Okay. So, War One, not World War, but this End Time War One takes out these. Then this group here is involved. And remember, Libya, over here in Africa, you have Egypt, and then you have Libya here, is called Put in the Bible. Egypt is called Egypt, Libya is Put, and Ethiopia of the Bible time included Sudan and Ethiopia today. And it was called Kush. All right? So that's why we know these things. Right, so basically simplifying this so we can fast forward, the second one takes out the next layer of the enemies. Out. All right? That's the Gog and Magog. There are two Gog and Magog wars. Right. Now, War Three begins what? Okay, and that goes right into Revelation now, chapter 6. And what judgments are they involved? The sealed judgments. We studied that. Now remember, that's coming from God. So once the tribulation starts, you have God intervening. You have Satan on the rampage. And you have the nations. In other words, everything is going against everything, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so it's not just man and Satan, it's God starting his judgments. All right, so then that takes us into War 4, which is what in the Bible? Okay, and what chapters are 8 and 9? 7 is a parenthesis in Revelation. It's a fast forward to the end. Chronologically, 6, 7, 6, 8, 9 run together. 7 is out of sequence. All right? That takes us into the trumpet judgments. Now, at the end of that, where are we in the 7-year tribulation?
Halfway.
We're halfway. The seal and the trumpets are here, and the bowl judgments come over here. All right, so we've had war, this was 3, war 3, with the sealed judgments, war 4. Okay, now where's war 5?
Heaven.
In heaven. This is a time that Lucifer goes up and tries to take over in heaven. He's having trouble down here with all this coming down, so he tries to take over the throne again, and he's kicked out of heaven, and now he's angry. And now he goes to make war with Israel. The Jews are protected at the beginning of the tribulation with the peace treaty from the Antichrist. Right?
Right?
So at this point, the Antichrist is demonized. And he goes to make war with Israel. Okay, so that, so okay, war 4, 5, okay, 5. Okay, then where is war 6? What is it? 6, it comes in here. And what is he doing? No, is 6 the bowl judgment?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. It's beginning, the bowl's coming out. Okay.
Right. Revelation 12.
Well, what is the Antichrist doing there during that time?
Well, he's fighting Israel. He's going after Israel.
Right, he's going after Israel. And so what happens to the remnant?
They're going into Jordan.
Yeah, the remnant, the 1/3, flees to what the Bible doesn't call Jordan, it calls it Edom. All right, and that's why if you look at your map where Edom is, Moab and Ammon are to modern-day Jordan. That's true. And if you read in Joel, it will tell us that the Antichrist is not able to get control of that area. God is protecting them. All right? And we'll get into more of that when we get to 8 here. But right. So then what does he do? The Egyptians in this group over here, they don't like the fact that he's, you know, all of a sudden this nice guy that's helping the world economy and everything, he's starting to take control. All right, so we have the king of the south rearing up again, the last rearing up of the king of the south. And so he comes over here to try to get control of this. And that's the one we studied last week. That would be war number 7, right?
Yes.
This is 7 years. Now that's a fast getting us up to war number 8, because war 8 is the key one. Right?
Right.
A lot of people think that all of these wars are just into one. Now, if you will look at the top of the outline, you'll see that Tim LaHaye and the other guy's view is on the left. That's taken from that, I'll give you new people another, this is what Jack gave me last week. And I thought, well, this will be great. It really divides it up. Well, I started looking at that map and checking the numbers out, and I thought, oh boy, there's some things here that he's looking at a little differently here. I got to give you this too, because this Basra is going to be important. See, I did a lot of homework. Now I'm going to ask you to make the comparison between that, all that on the left, which comes right off that handout with the map on it. Number 8, he said there are 8 stages to that war 8. And I'm saying no, because there are other wars. And he's just combining them. And okay, that's maybe fine. So, what can you draw from that just by looking at?
Looking at the one you just gave us?
Yeah. No, not Basra. The one that has
eight stages
on the left, and then I have some things on the right.
Oh.
I'll try to explain what that is.
What did you do on the right? Summarize the 8 stages from the left?
No. What I did on the right is I put the study that we're doing with the wars. And I'm showing you that what he's calling Armageddon, we've already studied as another war. Now, they all lead up to Armageddon, that's true. But I like it better when it's, each one is taken separately because it compares to the actual scriptures.
Well, don't you think that, I mean, I always thought you haven't separated Gog and Magog, and I think that is what's confusing because I always thought of it as one, but really there's two.
There are two Gog and Magog, yeah.
Right.
No, I didn't either for a long time. It helped me when I learned that.
It makes a difference.
Okay, we are on war number 8, which is called Armageddon. Right. And I have those references of Joel 3, Revelation 19, and what's the other reference?
Zechariah 14.
Yeah, Zechariah 14, right. Okay. So I think the easy way to do it is to take the 8 and to show where there are some sequencing errors, I believe. So number 1 is what? What does they say number 1 is? Yeah. Well, now you know throughout this whole pre-tribulation period, as the Antichrist arises a power in Europe, and probably the Western world's going to, you know, ally with it. We're losing our sovereignty. We're going to be part of this whole thing, right? So you know that there are going to be issues that other people have. They're watching this whole thing. Well, the Antichrist has to have a presence. We have a presence in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and all over the world. So the fact that he's gathering his forces, what does that really mean? When you read in the Bible, what does it really mean? Well, we ended up reading last time with War 7 that he pitched his tent, which means what?
That's the headquarters.
Headquarters. Absolutely, headquarters. They always pitch the tent for the leader. Today, I don't know what they do. They sit thousands of miles away with computers. But, right? Or in some armored portable trailer or something. Okay, so what do you have then? Between the what and the what? Okay, go back to the reference that we were reading last week, and you got the outline for War 7 on our major outline. What does it say? It's the multi-paged one.
Is it that?
We're reading in Daniel chapter 11, verse 40 to 45, right? Okay, well, in there, if you look it up, you will see that he pitched his tent between something and something else. Not one remembers? Well, put it in your mind.
His headquarters was in Belgium.
But yeah, okay. Mount, is it Mount Zion? Okay, Mount Zion and the sea. The sea is Mediterranean. It just happens to be, that's between, right? Okay, that just happens to be, there's a valley there, and if you look at the outline, one more page, you'll see a map and a picture of something. Where it's at number 8. There should be a map. You gotta go back further, maybe.
This map?
No, in the handout there would be a map. I gave you several maps, but.
Yeah.
No, not that map. No, in the series of the wars, which I think if you keep going back here, well, way back. One more. There you are. Okay. You'll see a map below, and you'll see a picture on the top. You all find that?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. That is a modern-day picture of the Valley of Armageddon. Now, in the Bible, it's called different things. What is it called? It's called the Valley of Jezreel, the Valley of
Armageddon,
the Valley of Death, the Valley of Decision. It's where the Supper of God takes place. There are two suppers in the Bible. There's the Lord's Supper and the Supper of God. You can only attend one. If you are a born-again believer and you partake in communion, you're partaking in the Lord's Supper, right? Okay. However, it talks about in this Battle of Armageddon, after all the dead are there, the vultures come and they have their feast. So the people are the delicacies for that supper. The Lord provides them in His, but Supper of God is the aftermath of the death from this Battle of Armageddon. Now look how beautiful that is. It's about 200 miles long, and I'm not sure what the width is. It's not extremely wide. And remember, it talks about that the blood will be as high as the bridle on the horse, and for 200 miles. Well, speaking about this region, so if you look at that map below, it might be hard to see, but it shows you there where it runs, kind of diagonally up from near Jerusalem, up near the Mediterranean Sea. And that's the region where this battle takes place. So when he say his armies are gathering, is he speaking about just the European armies or the other allies or whatever? Well, they begin to gather, but you remember that he's on a campaign to deal with this war with Egypt and so on, and he's also going after the people of Israel, which are not in this valley. You follow me? He doesn't get... His headquarters can be here, but that doesn't mean all the army is gathered here, because they go over here and they deal with other parts of Israel. You follow me? So that's kind of vague to me. So in other words, his armies coming into the Middle East come in a long time before the Battle of Armageddon. You follow me there? That's okay. So if he calls this is the Battle of Armageddon, no, this is prior to. That's why I tried to divide it out.
Okay. That makes sense. You've identified it as like War 6.
Well, yes, that's more like War 6 would be. That he's there now and going after Israel. So we know for sure he is. Okay, so what's number two under that?
Destruction of Babylon.
Okay, now here's a real big controversy. Now look where he has Babylon. And a question mark. It's a location unknown. And where is it? Modern day. The handout that Jack gave.
Yeah.
It's on that one. I know it's going to be confusing because we're going back and forth here. But the handout that Jack had, look at that map. Look where he has number two. Way up there in the right. Okay. Now where approximately is that today? He put it there, but he said unknown. Iraq. That's where Babylon was originally. And so the argument is that Babylon's going to be rebuilt. And when Saddam Hussein started to redo something in the ancient city of Babylon, all he did was do a little facade work to get tourists to come. And Madonna came over and dedicated Babylon. Now, isn't that appropriate?
Right.
I thought that was real appropriate. And think that they're Muslim. And they have somebody like that. Well, you can imagine what that did to the other Muslim countries. No. If you go, and there's a whole study on it, Dave Hunt's done a beautiful work on this, of giving a whole background. He's a great researcher and writer and a strong Christian man. And he's very old today. I've heard him speak over here at Calvary Chapel. And
who's this, David Hunt?
David Hunt.
Oh, okay.
Not Hawking. Hawking's there too. But David Hunt has done a lot on this. All right. If you go to Revelation and the time of the writing, what empire was in charge of that area. Who were the dictators? Rome. Rome. Rome put John on the Isle of Patmos. Yes. The Romans. All right. Now, could John say, Rome, those letters going out to those people, they're under persecution? No, wouldn't put Rome. He says, Mystery Babylon. Babylon has several meanings in the Bible. There was a literal Babylon city. There was a literal empire where Nebuchadnezzar was and Daniel went. Absolutely. Are there ruins of Babylon? Yes. And the city? Yes. But it also is metaphoric, representing evil. Just like it says in the scriptures about Sodom and Egypt. Israel was like Sodom and Egypt. Right, Egypt was representing idolatry. Sodom, immorality. It was used metaphorically. And I believe mystery Babylon. That's why the word mystery is there. Babylon, the great, has fallen. And he's referring to that verse, and he's conjecturing that we don't know the location of this Babylon.
Well, you do.
Well, I think it's very clear. And Dave Hunt, you can go through his work. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But if you go to, they even talks about the symbols. It talks about the colors that are involved and so on. So you have to remember in the end times, we have basically three major players. Not God. Now, God's involved, sure. But we're talking about the negative. And what are they?
The Antichrist.
The Antichrist.
The false prophet.
The false prophet. And
Satan.
All right, here's the 666. 777 is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They're trying to imitate. When it says Antichrist, does it mean against?
Ken.
In Greek, it doesn't mean just against, it means in place of. Trying to deceive you that this is Christ. He certainly is against Christ, but from the people of the world, he's a deceiver. Okay, so we have these three working. This, we know, he was Lucifer, right? Did this just go off? No. Okay. Who is this? Is this a spirit or a man? A man. Now, what is he originally referred to? I saw a coming out of
beast.
Beast. Coming out of the
sea.
I saw another beast coming from the land. In the Bible, when it just says sea, it means
Gentiles.
Land, Israel. The Antichrist must be a Gentile. The false prophet doesn't mean he's practicing Judaism, but his ancestry would be connected with Israel. That's what the Bible said. Okay? Now, this person's going to have a name, and he's going to look pretty good, right? He's not going to be coming off the street. The false prophet is going to serve the role of the Holy Spirit. So if we understand the ministry of the Holy Spirit is always, so you know it's the Holy Spirit, not a false spirit, because he will point to
Jesus.
And Jesus always pointed to the Father. So the false prophet is supposed to point to the Antichrist. And at some point, the Antichrist wants to be worshipped as God. Right? Now, the Antichrist doesn't realize that he's pointing to Satan. Satan's behind this. He's all into himself, so it's a breakdown there. But let's look right here now. What happens? It's pictured as the whore riding the beast. Okay. This is the whore, right? Riding the beast. The minor beast riding the big beast. It should be the other way around. Right? Riding means control of. the false prophet should not be more powerful than the Antichrist, right?
Right.
Well, you think the false prophet's going to want people worshiping when the false prophet is the spiritual leader of the one world religion? Now, what organization is already established to be that? It's the Pope, the papacy. He's not going to want competition in the spiritual area. Go back to Middle Age Europe. We had the kings in all the countries, and we had the Pope. And who controlled the kings?
Pope.
The Pope. Until they start rebelling. They're going to try to establish the same thing. They got their eyes on the Middle Age period. They know that they had it once before, they're going to do it again. And that's what they're trying to do today. Get everybody into this one world religion. You can believe what you want, but just come in under us. The Anglican Church is coming in. They have marriage allowed. So now they say, well, okay, we'll make an exception for all those that are already married. You can stay married. Well, don't you think later on, let's put the law down on that? Sure. You may not agree with that. But if you look at the Bible, it tells the colors. What are the colors? The Bible says that it will be
scarlet.
Right. And it talks about the cup of abomination. And what's in that cup? The blood of the saints. Not the blood of Christ. They claim it's the blood of Christ. But look at world history, the papacy has killed more Christians. The Huguenots in France. Why do you think the people came to the U.S.? They were trying to escape the persecution from the Catholic Church for religious freedom. They couldn't even take communion the way we take it. They had to take it the Catholic way. Yes. So I believe that they'll come out of the papacy. And if you look at the cardinals today, one of the most popular cardinals, he almost made it last time, is Jewish. Maybe it's coincidental, I don't know, but the possibility's there.
There's another thing, too, to show you about the Vatican getting involved in politics. In World War II, they supported the Nazis.
Oh, yes.
So you see, they're not reluctant to go one way.
And they also supported the Muslims, because the Muslims funded and had men in two Panther divisions of the German army. Do you know that? You know, I have a degree in history. I wasn't taught these things. Our history has been distorted. Been distorted. It's the real Christians that are digging into these things and exposing them. The Muslims will even tell you that they've supported Hitler because they wanted to finish off the Jews in their area. Sure. Same thing's happening. Okay. Now, where I wanted to go with this, somebody want to know or can help me? Babylon. Okay. So now, when it says that Babylon has been done away with, you have a war between the Antichrist and the false prophet. Because he's going to shake this whore off his back. And remember, it talks about the great harlot and her sisters will become the one world religion. What are the sisters of the papacy? All the denominations that came out of Rome. You know, you may not agree with this, but I believe in the book of Acts. And I don't see any church buildings in the book of Acts. I see homes. I see a meeting under trees and such. The true church has always been a remnant around the Catholic Church. It did not come out. If you study the history of Christian church, I hope you go to Acts chapter 2, verse 8. With Peter preaching. Don't go to Rome. No. Do you know how the Catholic Church got started? By Constantine. He gave power to the church. He was an emperor. As Rome was, you know, in its declining stages, he saw that with that religion, he could control the people. And they did. They eventually controlled Europe. The Muslims use the same thing. You think that the leaders in the Muslim world practice Islam?
No.
The former king of Saudi Arabia, Fahad, I was there, I met his son. I didn't see him personally, but I saw him on TV and think, look at his eyes, you see pictures. He was a drug addict. And he had to go to Switzerland to get dried out. Hey, if I walked around under drugs, my head would be gone. No, they use it for control, just as this would be used. Okay, so now how do we get the Babylon thing? Well, if you study the whole thing about Mystery Babylon, all this Babylon stuff, you will find that it has to come right here. So the false prophet is killed by the Antichrist. There is war within Satan's group. Evil always turns on itself. Just watch a pirate movie when they're getting the chest. You know, the captain says to like five guys, you're with me, we're going to get it all. But he tells each one of those five, it's just the two of us. And then when the movie's about over, they have the treasure chest on a block and tackle, trying to load it into something else, and the rope breaks, and it goes back into the ocean, and nobody gets it. Now, I think that's a good moral. That's almost a biblical principle. Today's movies wouldn't be that way. But really, I mean, you see that over and over again, conspiring and all that. Okay. So, I believe that what happens is when the Antichrist kingdom, when this is destroyed, that is Babylon. Because there's a great rejoicing in heaven because the martyrs' blood has been redeemed. Mm-hmm. Remember how the martyrs cry out? Right. Okay, when this happens. So I believe that Babylon can be a figurative thing, meaning the organization here. The city, I think, is Vatican City. Not Rome, but Vatican City. And people say, yes, but it sounds like it's in the Middle East. Well, he moves his headquarters. What are they trying to do today regarding Jerusalem?
Divide it.
Okay, divide it, but who's going to control it? Not the people who have the division. No, who has a plan to control it? The Pope. And the Western world. The UN and the Pope. He'll control all the religious things. They already have some of them, right? Can you see how it fits in? They want to move the embassies to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. And so Europe, the United Europe, wants a presence in the Middle East. All right, so Babylon comes from here over to here, but regardless, I believe it's part of this organization. And I believe the city is the Vatican City is Babylon.
Where do you think oil is going to play into this? Do you see oil running out, or is Israel getting oil?
No, I see Israel getting oil. If you read Psalm 83, read these pre-wars, you'll see for a brief period of time, Israel is blessed. And it could be coming up very quickly. As this outer group is destroyed, Israel will gain control of that. Again, Saudi Arabia never joins into that whole thing. They don't get into the Armageddon thing, unless they're supporting the West. You can see it today. They're surrounded by problems. Saudi Arabia isn't worried about Israel. They're worried about Iran. See, God gave them a schism in Islam, which protects Israel, right? Shiite Sunni schism. And you know the basis of that schism? How did it come out? Okay, let's take Jesus. Jesus had around him 12 apostles, right? But he also had, earthly speaking, Mary and Joseph and four brothers that we know of, right? Joseph Jr., Simeon, and two have books in the Bible, Jude and James, all right?
He lost one.
Who lost him? Huh? Who lost
him?
Oh, I was talking about his brother, Jesus' brothers. Okay, he did lose one, but he brought Paul in and replaced him. Now, I know they cast dice for some other guy, but I think God brought Paul as an apostle. Pretty obvious, right? Okay, so my main point is here is his disciples or apostles versed on his family. Well, Muhammad had the same thing. He had a group of close people, and then he had a family. And that's where the division. When he died, they said, we are the leaders. They said, no, we're the leaders. Boom, there they go. Shiite, Sunni. I don't remember which is which. One follows the family descendants, and the other follows his close apostles. Now, to give you an idea why Iraq, other than oil, would be important to Iran, where is the holy sites for, where's Saudi Arabia here? Well, that's the old map we had up. Okay. you aren't taking pictures so we can flash back. Okay.
Just turn the page.
Okay, you turn the page.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, where are the holy sites for the Shia, the Sunnis? Saudi Arabia is the stronghold for the Sunni religion.
Mecca.
Mecca. And north of Mecca is Medina. Mecca, Medina. Mecca is where the mosque is. That's where the Hajj. They all go there once in a lifetime. They have to come from all the world to there. And Medina was the home area. Muhammad spent a lot of time in Mecca, Medina. Right, so those are holy areas. A non-Muslim cannot go to those cities. I could not go to those cities. I could watch it on TV every day, the mosque. I couldn't go there. All right, now, they claim that the Dome of the Rock, because that's where Muhammad supposedly ascended, right? That was a Byzantine church, so that's all false. But we do know the Mecca and Medina thing. Now, where are the Shiites? Where's their holy site? Tehran? No. It's in western Iraq. You see, when Europe, when the British went in and started drawing lines in the sand and said, this is going to be Iraq and you're the president, and this is going to be Saudi Arabia and you're the king, it was the British, predominantly the Western world, that put those people in power and then tried to control them. Yeah, they did.
That's true.
The first king of Saudi Arabia's name was Ibn, and guess what his last name was? Saud. That area was called Arabia. So they just said, oh, here's the kingdom of Saud Arabia. Well, it's all, most of Saudi Arabia is barren. They got one-fourth of it they call the empty quarter. I mean, a camel can survive. It's the real desert with the sand dunes and all that. They have some mountainous areas by Jeddah and things like that. But it's this huge area is hard to cultivate. They can't even get good drinking water. Because when they drill for water, it's oil-based. When you shower, you're showering in oil-based water. It's awful. I found some Kilgon and a bathtub somewhere. I think we had one bathtub in the whole compound, but I found one because every now and then I just had to get my hair in, you know, all the oil out of it. And they have desalinated water for drinking and cooking and stuff. All right, so anyway, I'm getting off track here. Why are we on that? Oh, okay, Iraq. Oh, no, they put these countries together. Well, okay, well, the people from over in Iran, the Bedouin people would come back and forth, and they had access to that holy areas to them. And then all of a sudden, it's divided up, and you can't go there. It's a different country. That's why the Iranians were trying to fight the Iraqis. Remember the Iranian-Iraq war? They wanted to control that, because that was their holy sites. We helped them, by the way, by getting rid of Saddam, because now the Shiites are the dominant people in Iraq. The Sunnis are a minority. So, okay, so there's a big cemetery there they all want to be buried in. It's huge. They have, and they don't embalm. And so they're shipping bodies constantly from all over the world to be buried there. They have people, all they do is bury people. It's the world's largest cemetery. But that's their holy area. Can you see why they're fighting is? Okay, and then when, I forgot this, when Churchill gave away Jordan from Israel, what happened? the British Empire started to fall.
The United States and Russia demanded that Israel give up its colonies throughout the world. So that was part of it too.
Oh yes, there was a lot involved. Okay, now, any questions or comments before we move to number three?
You sure covered a lot of territory.
Well, we're just getting started.
See what I mean?
This is background. Okay.
I don't realize how teeny tiny my brain is.
Okay. No, it'll be much simpler once we...
Oh, God.
Some people like a lot of background. Okay. Number three, what does it say in there?
Fall of Jerusalem.
Okay, the fall of Jerusalem. This has to occur after what point? It has, right, exactly. It must occur after the middle of the tribulation. Because that's when the Antichrist turns on Israel. So we know it's during time, and what is God doing during that time? The bowl judgments are coming, right?
Right.
Which we say is during war five.
Six.
Six. Yeah, six. See? And so he's saying that's all part of Armageddon. Well, no, there is an actual campaign of Armageddon, but all of this occurs prior to it.
You see? Them all together.
Yeah, he did. And they aren't sequenced right.
Yeah. You better write here. Who do you
know? Well, but he has a different kind of thing.
The end result will be the same, but.
No.
it's all done, said, and done. But
yeah.
It's still important to get it in the right sequence.
He's using some scriptures. I looked at some of the scriptures he used, and they're a little generic, and we'll get into some of that. In other words, I'm trying to stick with things that you don't have to draw a lot of inferences from. You know, it's more specific, and that's the people.
Do you use pretty much King James, or do you use NIV, or does that make a difference? Or?
No, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't?
Mm-mm. No, it has to do with their fundamental belief about, like Babylon, for instance,
yes.
And the idea of the false prophet and how all that relates. And then they say the whore riding the beast, that means something else, and so on and so forth. Well, when you start saying that, then you got to say all this other doesn't fit in either. So.
Change the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I
always try to start with the rocks. You know, the foundations that are very, very scripturally okay. And then you start going up. Well, if one rock doesn't fit with the other, then you know something's not right. There are too many verses in Isaiah that can be very generic if you don't see the timeline of Isaiah. See what I'm saying? It can get really complicated. So
average Christian reader
wouldn't
pick up on that.
No. Well, that's where I was. I was in my pilgrimage through this stuff. It just, you know, I just thought, there's no way I can get this organized at all. And then I started discovering certain people and finding out that they were teaching the same thing, and then more and more and more, and then I started studying their teachings, and then their references, go back and read it, and so on and so forth. Ah, yeah, I see how this fits together.
How many years have you done this?
Oh, I know, 10 or 15 at least.
I think every Bible should say in it, see Paul.
No. No.
No. Have you remembered?
No. No. Well, I want to be accurate, and so I keep questioning myself, too. And I'm open to make some adjustments if they need to be made.
And you probably have, as you said.
Yes, I have. I couldn't figure out when the church ended. And now I know for sure it's the rapture. It's not the end of the tribulation. Because that program is for Israel. And once I got, oh boy, then that solved a lot of things, because I couldn't understand Ezekiel 40 to 48. That's the millennial temple. Why are there going to be sacrifices in the temple? The church isn't going to go to a sacrifice. Ah, but he's not through with the Jews. They will be there. We'll be worshiping the Lord, and they'll be over there cutting goats up and sheep. Wouldn't you rather be over worshiping than dealing with all that? If I had to live in the wilds, I'd go with him. Because I know he could fix a fish out. He could get a deer dressed out or whatever you needed. We could have meat. But if we're up to meat, I'd be a vegetarian.
But God,
I might be able to handle a fish. I don't like to kill animals and stuff. And I'm not saying it's bad when people do. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't want to be a priest. And had, yeah, I know you wouldn't, yeah. But some people can handle those things. And I'm just being honest to say, I suppose if I were starving, I could get in and do something. I could probably eat a raw fish or something. You know, who knows what we'd do? People eat bugs when they're starving. Okay, now we're really getting off. What's number four? Oh,
number four is the Antichrist armies at Basra.
Okay, now here's another big problem. How many Basras are there?
Two.
How many Bethlehems were there at the time of Jesus?
Two.
Why in Micah 5:2 did the Lord say, Bethlehem, Judea? Because there were two. Okay, take out your Basra references. Somebody read the first one.
When he was dying, Joab, son of Zara from Basra, succeeded him as king. From Genesis 36:33.
Okay, so would you say by that it's a location?
Yeah.
Okay, so that verse says that there is a location named Basra.
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't give us much more. Number two. Anybody?
When Bela died, Joab, son of Zerah from Basra, succeeded him as king.
Okay, so Basra was a city, right? Okay.
It's the same as the first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just yeah.
Keep going.
It's another verse.
Number three.
The sword of the Lord is bathed in blood. It is covered with fat, the blood of lambs and goats, fat from the kidneys of rams. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Basra and a great slaughter in Edom.
Okay. So Basra is a city that has had some action in the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number four.
Who is this coming from Edom, from Basra, with his garments stained crimson? Who is this robed in splendor, striding forward in the greatness of his strength? It is I, speaking in righteousness, mighty to save.
Okay, the first ones are past, right?
What?
This one, you put a circle around it because it is future.
Yeah. Oh, the first three are past?
Are past. Now it asks the question, who is this coming? Now we can answer that question.
There's only one that's righteous and mighty.
Jesus.
Okay, now what is that describing him? Is coming?
Robed in
the new king.
Well, Jesus.
Jesus coming.
That is a second coming prophecy. But for him to come from Basra, he already had to come from heaven. And if you look farther on his list, he comes from heaven, the second coming. Well, see, he's got them out of order, right? They're out of order. Okay, now that's an important one. He's coming from Basra, and what about his garments?
Stained crimson.
Okay, now where did he get the blood?
From that.
Some people teach the cross. That's not true.
That war where everything was so bloody, Armageddon?
Yes, from the Battle of Armageddon.
Oh.
Now, did the Armageddon take place prior to him coming from Basra or before?
Before.
before. You see what I'm saying? If you use a Bible, it explains it. Just pure logic. You can't get the blood from the battle unless he's been in the battle. So the Battle of Armageddon's already taken place with that one. That should come way down his list. And who's he coming with?
Well, wait a minute. How do you know that that isn't the blood of sins, the blood from the cross? Maybe I'm wrong.
Because there are other verses that talk about the battle itself. See, I'm taking him Tim LaHaye's way, then we're going to go at it my way, or is the other people's way.
Is this Tim? This is Tim LaHaye?
Yeah, that's his, right off that map.
I always liked him. Now you're making me not like Tim LaHaye. I always thought he was real good, but now you say he's kind of off?
Well, I think so. The Left Behind series has some biblical principle, but there's some huge mistakes in it. It's a novel of, I think it's gotten some people turned on to, looking at the future, and God can use it, but I wouldn't use it for a biblical study. Where does the end of the end times take place, the tribulation, in the U.S. or in the Middle East? In the Middle East. The paradigm is wrong. Flying around Lear jets, digging gold out of backyards and trying to... Come on, it's Alice in Wonderland. I'm sorry. I got the series on tape and I took it back to the... But anyway, I know God has used it, so I'm not saying that. And he's a fine person. I'm not... Okay. But just like, don't put me up there. Question everything I say. Same thing with Tim LaHaye or anybody who becomes well known. We got to deal with the Holy Spirit and the Bible ourselves, really. Okay, so we'll get to that. But okay, so anyway, number five.
Okay, I don't know how to pronounce K-E-R-I-O-T-H.
Kiria.
And Boswell to all towns of Moab, far and near.
Okay, another clue. Location. Okay, check your map out. Which side of the Dead Sea are we on? East or west? West?
East.
East. You have, what is it, Ammonites, Moabites, Edomites. Just that region there. Now, today there is no really Moab, but we can find out where it is today. So it's Jordan. It's part of Jordan, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so circle that one. That fits into this. Now we know the location of one of the Basra. See, here's the problem. Now look at his map. He has Petra and Basra. Is that accurate? It's kind of a loose map, but is it basically accurate? Is Petra in the same area?
Oh,
the Rock City. Down below there to the right.
Same area.
Okay, now that's correct. That location, I believe, is correct.
For Petra, for both?
Yeah.
Okay.
Petra is in the area and Basra is in the area. But which Basra? See, we're going to come up with another Basra during Armageddon. Okay?
Second.
There's a Basra Israel. Okay, I don't want to get ahead. Okay, go on to the next one. So circle those two now. All right, the next one. See, when you do a Bible study, you go and get everything related to Basra. Okay, now you say, well, that doesn't really fit in the end time. That's already taken place. These two do. They're part of our, we're putting the puzzle together. They're part of the pieces. Okay, six.
Look, an eagle will soar and swoop down, sweeping its wings over Basra. In that day, the hearts of Edom's warriors will be like the heart of a woman in labor.
Okay.
I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that Basra will become a ruin and an object of horror, of reproach and of cursing, and all its towns will be ruins forever.
Now, first thing you're going to ask yourself is what time period? Has that city that referred to in the first three been ruined?
Yes.
Yes, they don't exist. Basically today, they aren't actual, they're ruins, yes. Right? Now, but is it referring to these other Basras?
Probably.
Okay, because I'm going to tell you that in the Battle of Armageddon, there's a plateau along the side called Basra. And I believe that's where the Antichrist has pitched his tent, his headquarters, and that's what's being destroyed, not the Petra Basra. See what I'm saying?
Oh, we wouldn't destroy Petra Basra.
So circle that.
That's right.
Circle that and put Basra, put Israel Basra, not the other Basra.
In Jeremiah 49:20.
Yeah, it's the Basra where the Antichrist headquarters is.
Petra.
It's not where the remnant is.
Oh,
see the difference?
Yeah.
Now the one that was just read, that Vivian read first, right, the eagle. Now who is pictured as under eagle's wings? God, right. God. And he's protecting. Well, have you ever seen birds protecting their young? They protect them with their wings. Right, so that's a metaphor that God is circling, and what is he going to do here? Now, is he protecting?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Is he protecting Basra or destroying it?
Protecting it.
He's protecting it.
Okay, so which Basra is he protecting?
Israel.
No, he's protecting the Basra in Jordan because that's where the remnant is. He's protecting the remnant. Remember, the Antichrist can't come in there. We read that in Joel. It says that the earth opens up and swallows them, those are armies are done away with. Antichrist can't get in there. See what I'm saying now? Why it's confusing? Basra. Oh, there's Basra. So then they apply it to whatever they're thinking. No, I don't come in with my plan. I go and say, Lord, okay, what's this Basra? I've heard there are two Basras. I need to know where they are and what they're about. Okay, now the other one, what do you want, 7?
The next one down, I will send fire upon Teman that will consume the fortresses of Basra.
Okay, that's probably which one? The fortress. The one in Israel, right, that's the Armageddon War. That relates to the actual Armageddon campaign or battle, right. Next one.
I will surely gather all of you, O Jacob. I will surely bring together the remnant of Israel. I will bring them together like sheep in a pen, like a flock in its pasture. The place will throng with people.
Okay. Now that is forecasting that he's going to take his remnant and put him there. Right? So that would be a pre-thing to the war. That would start right after here. That would be the time period of that verse. And that relates to the remnant being protected in Petra, Basra, or whatever. Basra is probably a region more than a city. Petra is a city. By the way, Petra is the ancient capital of Edom. Mm-hmm. Okay, next one.
That's it.
Okay, now, can you see why I have a problem with that listing?
Not at all.
Okay, well now now let's go to the next one. When I first got it, I thought, oh, this will be great. This will really make the lesson easy and nice laid out and everything. And I started studying and thought, whoa. So, okay, let's go back then to number what of Tim LaHaye's?
I think we're on 5.
After Basra, what is it?
Regeneration of Israel.
Israel's regeneration.
Okay, now, what is that without looking at my nose? When is Israel regenerated?
You have down coronation of the Lord. War 8.
Yeah, but what do you think?
Millennium.
I think it's got to be the millennium.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can't be regenerated in the middle of all this coming in. No, they're brought back, the remnant, and he's going to then do what with the remnant? Matthew 25, the golden sheep judgment, right? They're in the flesh, They're not glorified bodies, but they're remnant. They have accepted Jesus Christ. So they go into the millennium in the flesh. Okay? Now, if there are people in this group or other people coming, Gentiles coming through here alive, which some people teach no Gentile will make it out of the tribulation. David Hawking teaches that. I don't know on that one for sure. But there will be people judged at the golden sheep. That's a temporary judgment. The sheep go into the millennium in the flesh. The goats drop dead and go to torment. All right?
Well,
well, that's the nutshell. It's a temporary judgment. Right. Okay, next one.
Second coming.
You see, the second coming, I mean, how can Jesus be coming from Basra? Now we have the second coming. You see what I'm saying? So the point is, when does Jesus come in the middle of this second half of the tribulation?
At the end.
Yes, he comes very much at the end. See? Some of that other stuff has already taken place. Okay, and then what do you have?
End of fighting at the Valley of Jehoshaphat.
Yeah. Now, he calls it Jehoshaphat. Is that the same as Jezreel and Armageddon? Yeah, it is. It is. It's another name for it. Okay, now I know we're running out of time, and so you can take a big breath and culminate this for now. Next week we'll go take War 8 the way I would have taken War 8 and go through the stages. But remember, the sequence is centering around these judgments. When the bold judgments are finished, that's when the Lord comes back. And what does he do first? Now, he's got that right. Basra comes before Mount of Olives. Some people teach he comes from heaven to the Mount of Olives, it splits. No, because when he hits the Mount of Olives, it's over with, and the earth starts to get restructured for the millennium. So that's the last thing. Is going to the Mount of Olives. He's got that correct, I think, on his map. Okay.
Well, do you see the U.S. in here anywhere?
Yes. I think we'll become part, we came out of Europe, and so I think we'll be part of the Antichrist, the reviving of Europe. I think now with our politics in Washington, we're giving up our sovereignty, our economy is shot, and Europe has got trouble too, but I think the Western world will ally in some kind of a configuration. So we may be one of those 10 toes, one of the configurations. David Hawking teaches it that way. He said the world is in 10 regions by the internationals, but Europe is also in 10 regions. So I don't know what 10 they're talking about. I think it's Europe, he thinks it's the world. And I say it can't, I don't think it's the world, because Psalm 2 says all nations will go against Israel. Okay, true. But you can't take that out of context. It did not say the Antichrist will gain control over all the world. Why are the kings of the East? See, we haven't even gotten into that. That's a major thing, is the Euphrates drying up and the kings of the East coming in to fight, not Israel. They're to fight the Antichrist because they don't want him. They've seen him taking over the whole world and got all the oil and everything. They aren't. China, do you know that China is the greatest user of Middle East oil? They made a special deal with Iran that they get reasonable prices for the next 50 years. Yeah, which we helped build China to the point where they needed the oil, right? Yeah. Okay, any comments or questions? I know, and I apologize if I've been flitting around here and you're saying, oh gosh.
That's a right flip. Gee, you can read our minds, too.
Well,
I think you've done very well.
You have, you have.
I get excited and...
You know, we had a talk about Bishop O'Brien. He had to do penance, you know, when he hit that fellow and killed him.
Yeah.
And anyway, he would come in, and Roy will confirm this. Never one time that I have acquiesced to him to give this final prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Never once did he pray to be married.